Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
ARC and PLC are safety net programs that we have here at the Farm Service Agency.
So producers wanting to enroll in ARC or PLC have until April 15th. Farm Service Agency Administrator Bill Beam.
They are basically there to help farmers and protect them against financial drops in their commodity prices. And we know we have volatility in those commodities now. You can select through ARC County and or PLC, which provides crop by crop protection. There's another selection called ARC Individual, which protects the entire farm. So ARC County is a county level protection. PLC provides crop-by-crop protection, and ARC Individual protects your entire farm.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We have many, many countries that are coming to negotiate deals with us, and they're going to be fair deals, and in certain cases, they're going to be paying substantial tariffs. There'll be fair deals.
Speaking from the Oval Office on Monday, President Donald Trump on trade and tariffs with Japan.
As you know, I spoke this morning with the Prime Minister of Japan, and we had a very good conversation. They're coming. And I said, one thing, you're going to have to open up your country, because we sold no cars, like zero cars in Japan, and they sold millions of cars into our country. They don't really take our agriculture, a little bit of it, just to keep us slightly happy, but they don't take what they're supposed to be taking. So we have a great relationship with Japan. We're going to keep it that way, but they're coming in to meet, and other countries are coming in. With China, as you know, against my statement, they put a 34% tariff on above what their ridiculous tariffs were already. And I said, if that tariff isn't removed by tomorrow at 12 o'clock, we're putting a 50% tariff on above the tariffs that we put on. So they've gone for years. They've become a rich country because of people, again, that were in the White House that allowed this to happen. Hundreds of billions of dollars a year they'd make on us on trade, and it shouldn't be that way. And I have a great relationship with President Xi. I hope it's going to stay that way. I have great respect for China. But they can't do this. We're going to have one shot at this, and no other president's going to do this, what I'm doing. And I'll tell you what, it's an honor to do it, because we have been just destroyed, what they've done to our system. You know, we have $36 trillion of debt for a reason. And the reason is that people allowed it to get that way. So we'll be talking to China. We'll be talking to a lot of different countries. And I think, you know, if we can make a really fair deal and a good deal for the United States, not a good deal for others, this is America first. It's now America first. And we didn't put America first. We put America last. The people that were in the Oval Office put America last, and we're not going to stand for it.
But it seems like China gets the headlines, and Trump says he almost had a deal with China.
That can be permanent. Tariffs, and there can also be negotiations, because there are things that we need beyond tariffs. We need open borders. You know, we almost had a deal with China where we're going to open up China. It was almost done. Some of you remember it during my first term, and it was very disappointing. We ended up making a great deal. $50 billion worth of product was sold. $50 billion. You'd like that in Israel. And I made that deal, but it wasn't the deal that I wanted. It was the deal that I wanted was that plus they were going to open up China so that our companies could go into China and compete with other countries and China for the, you know, for a large number of people. And at the very end, that deal was terminated, and we went to a piece of the deal. And there are a lot of things outside of tariffs, but tariffs are very important. But there are a lot of things like opening up countries that were totally closed. China's essentially a closed country. In fact, it is a closed country. And what they do is they charge tariffs so that if you sell cars or if you sell anything, nobody's going to buy it because the price is out of control. But that's true with a lot of other countries also. So we're going to get fair deals and good deals with every country. And if we don't, we're going to have nothing to do with them. They're not going to be allowed to participate in the United States.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Many of my clients increase their investments in equipment to make use of the 199A deduction, as well as the last full years of bonus depreciation.
Michigan CPA Michelle Gallagher on what's at stake with the expiration of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
If the 199A deduction expires, the taxes on pass-through businesses will go up sharply, while C corporations and publicly traded companies will continue to enjoy their lower 21% TCJA permanent corporate rate. This simply is just not fair to the Main Street businesses and farmers of our country. 199A should be permanently extended, period. Full bonus depreciation under the TCJA has also been a game changer for my business clients. Immediate deductions have freed up capital for investments in state-of-the-art equipment, resulting in increased efficiency, production, and job creation. Lower marginal tax rates for nearly all taxpayers have bolstered the financial health of businesses and farmers and provided relief for working families. When marginal rates are higher, families must tighten their belts and businesses face greater financial strain at the expense of growth opportunities. When marginal rates are lower, working families have more take-home pay and they can invest more in their families and communities. If the marginal rates are not permanently extended, nearly every American worker will go home with a smaller paycheck starting in just 11 short months. The doubling of the standard deduction has simplified tax filing for millions of Americans and provided substantial tax savings for middle-class families. In addition to these tax savings, the simplicity has saved taxpayers valuable time and enabled them to focus on running their businesses, farms, and households instead of navigating complex tax filings. The expanded child tax credit under TCJA has been a lifeline for working families and has even had a direct impact on my own family. My brother, who works as a public school teacher, relies on this child tax credit to help provide for his wife and seven children between the ages of 4 and 19. His modest salary is stretched thin, and the child tax credit has been essential to covering their family expenses. For families like this, the expanded child tax credit is not just helpful, it is indispensable and must be retained. The estate tax presents a constant source of worry and financial burden for many family businesses and farmers that I work with. Many business owners and family farmers may appear wealthy on paper, but almost always lack the cash or liquidity to pay estate taxes. I have seen this lead to family businesses closing or being gobbled up by multinational corporations because they realize they cannot afford to pay the death tax. Additionally, compliance costs related to the estate tax amount to over $18 billion annually, according to the Tax Foundation, a figure that actually exceeds the annual estate tax revenue collected. That's right. More money is spent annually complying with the tax than the government collects in the tax itself. If the estate tax is not addressed this year, the current exemption will be cut in half, doubling or tripling the amount of unexpected families forced to pay this death tax. Congress should pull the plug on the death tax for good. No grieving family has to deal with this unfair double tax. Small businesses and farms are the heartbeat of their communities, creating jobs and fostering local economic growth. As someone who has worked closely with businesses, farmers, and working families for 35 years, I have seen the tangible benefits of the TCJA firsthand. I urge Congress to permanently and swiftly extend these provisions to provide certainty to America's small businesses, farmers, and families.
This is Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The European Union's been very bad to us.
Speaking from the Oval Office on Monday, President Donald Trump.
They don't take our cars. Like Japan in that sense, they don't take our agricultural product. They don't take anything practically. And yet they send millions of cars in a year, Mercedes-Benz, Volkswagen, BMWs. They're sending millions and millions of cars into the U.S. But we don't have a car that's been sold to the European Union or other places. But let's go for the European Union. And it's not going to be that way. It's got to be fair and reciprocal. It's got to be fair. It's not fair. We have a deficit with the European Union of $350 billion, and it's going to disappear fast. And one of the reasons and one of the ways that can disappear easily and quickly is they're going to have to buy our energy from us because they need it. They're going to have to buy it from us. They can buy it. We can knock off $350 billion in 1 week. They have to buy and commit to buy a like amount of energy, and we have that.
What about energy?
You know, we have more energy than any country in the world. I don't know if you know that. He knows everything, but the one thing he may not know, we have more energy than any country in the world. We have more of every kind of energy, every form of energy, from oil and gas to coal. And people talk about, I call it beautiful, clean coal. As you know, Germany is opening up a coal plant a week. They tried the windmills and it didn't work. They tried all the other solutions and they were ready to go out of business. Now they're doing a coal plant a week. China is now up to two coal plants. They're opening two major coal plants every single week in China, all over China. And then we're not allowed to use coal. Well, we have clean, beautiful coal more than anybody else. We have oil and gas more than anybody else. We have the most energy of any country in the world, including Saudi Arabia, including everybody, by a lot. And I took it to number one. We were number three. And I took it to number one during my administration. And the reason that we were hurt so badly and the reason that we went into such incredible inflation during Biden is energy.
And then there's another key component of inflation, groceries.
I said we're going to try and get groceries down, right? An old-fashioned term, but a beautiful term. Eggs. So when I got in, the press went absolutely crazy the first week. They said, eggs have quadrupled in price. I said, I just got here. Tell me about it. And Brooke Rollins and our team did a great job, and eggs are down now 79%, and they're all over the place. And this was a problem that somebody else would have taken a long time to cure. We have energy is down. We have interest rates are down. We have groceries, meaning food is down. We have everything is down at levels that nobody ever thought possible. Energy looks like it's going to be in the $2.50 a gallon range and maybe below that for a car. So for gasoline. So we're really doing amazing. I mean, we're cutting prices because prices got so high, people couldn't live. I mean, the prices for groceries, the prices for standard groceries, standard things were going through the roof. They couldn't live. And now those prices are coming down. So call them groceries. But that's down, energy's down, and interest rates are down.
And what's important about interest rates?
Everything's down. And the interest rates, the beauty there is when we refinance debt, you know, debt's become such a big factor in this country. We're going to start paying debt off with tariffs and other things. But it's such a big factor because the interest rate's so high. Well, now that's coming way down. So our budget's going to look a lot better.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Yesterday, obviously, was a big day, and it was an effectuation of the president's vision of national security, of food security, of putting our Americans first, our farmers and our ranchers, which as Secretary of Agriculture is really what I'm focused on.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
I know we're hearing from countries that are kind of complaining about what's happening, but I have a chart. This is sort of shows you the exports of other countries, India, Taiwan, Japan, this is the average, 14%. Well, down here, you've got little bitty United States of America, right? I mean, this is what he's trying to fix. And for our farmers and our ranchers, they understand that there may be a short time of uncertainty, but for the long haul, as we restructure the American economy and the government, American economy and our private sector, with the government playing a role in that, President Trump's vision of using tariffs. Again, I'm not surprised there's some complaining, but at the end of the day, this president committed to putting Americans first, and as part of that are our farmers and our ranchers.
And what about those who are saying this is the wrong approach?
Well, listen, y'all, we are a couple hours in. The president announced this yesterday afternoon. We knew that there would be some of that as people are adjusting. But at the end of the day, yesterday marked step one. This will be a short time of uncertainty, and then we'll move back to the prosperity that this president has envisioned, that he is so bold and so willing to fight for. And I couldn't be more proud and stand next to him. The new golden age of prosperity will move in. Again, for me, I'm really focused on our farmers and our ranchers, and that's what we'll continue to focus on. But it will reach every corner of America as we are restructuring.
With all this uncertainty, what's the Federal Reserve doing? Chairman Jerome Powell.
The basic two big data pools are the data around prices and around employment. And, you know, we get in the employment area, we get just really, that's an area where we actually get pretty good data although the survey response rates have been lower. Nonetheless, we get a lot of different data, and it's not just unemployment, it's participation, it's by age group and things like that. It's wages, it's many, many different things. It's jobs, it's quits, all the job creation quits, openings, all those things. So that's one thing. On inflation, we target PCE, personal consumption expenditure inflation, not CPI, and the two are broadly, they move together, but 25 years ago, the Fed switched to PCE. The public looks at CPI. It's kind of a little bit of a thing, but because we think, it's really just a better way to capture the inflation, the cost pressures that households and businesses feel. We think it's a better measure, and that's what we look at. But they're not that different. I mean, they're just they look at different measures. Ultimately, they're pretty close together. Those things, on growth, you look at what's happening with consumer spending. The economy is overwhelmingly driven by consumer spending. So you look at how are consumer surveys, how are they feeling, how are they spending. Sometimes the surveys are very negative, but they keep spending. That happens. That's been happening really for a while. People spent right through the pandemic, and they spent right through this time of higher inflation. They kept spending, and forecasters kept thinking, like us, kept thinking that consumption would slow down. That's a really critical thing. After that, business investment is a big chunk, and you look at that, and that is also susceptible to sentiment. Businesses, if they don't know what to do, they're not going to do an acquisition, or they're going to hold off on building a factory or a plant or hiring people, things like that. So we look at, I could go on for a long time. We look at a lot of data, and we try to make sense. We also talk to people who are in the real economy. I grew up, my career was mostly in the private sector, talking to, to people who ran businesses. And for me, the story doesn't come together until I actually hear from people who are in the economy doing things and what they're feeling and seeing. And then it sort of fits together better.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
If Congress fails to act, the average family of four will end up paying the equivalent of 9 weeks of groceries in higher taxes.
Missouri Representative Jason Smith is chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. What's at stake with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act?
After 4 years of sticker shock at the grocery store, that's the last thing families need. 40 million parents will have their child tax credit slashed in half. 2 million family farmers will see the death tax exemption slashed in half. 91% of all taxpayers will see their guaranteed deduction slashed in half. 26 million small businesses will be hit with a 43.4% top tax rate, more than 20 points higher than what businesses pay in communist China. Today, as we speak, businesses are making decisions about where they are going to invest, hire, and grow this year and in the years to come. And they're making those decisions based on the taxes they expect to pay. And uncertainty is an unnecessary weight on our job creators and our family farmers, who will have to start calling accountants and estate planners to figure out how they might navigate higher taxes.
Earlier this year, asking Michigan CPA Michelle Gallagher.
Ms. Gallagher, one of the major reasons to extend the 2017 Trump tax cuts as soon as possible is to give America workers, families, farmers, and small businesses certainty in the long run. Small businesses are facing a 43.4% tax rate if the 199A small business deduction, as I refer to it, expires. This looming threat impacts decisions they are making today about whether to invest, grow, hire. The same is true for the 2 million family farmers facing a potential increase in their death tax. If Congress doesn't act soon, family-owned farms and Main Street businesses will have to start calling estate planners and accountants to figure out how they navigate the potential increases in taxes. So can you speak to how this uncertainty drives decision-making today among America's families, farmers, small businesses?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. My phone has been ringing off the hook since last August with the pending election of families and business owners and the uncertainty of where this tax change may go. We have been running meetings and scenarios with our clients for months now, trying to plan for the future. Many successful businesses do their forecasting out not just 1 year, which is just the year we're in now, but the most successful ones plan out 3 years, 5 years, 10 years out, especially when they're looking at investing, whether it's investing into more employees or more equipment. That takes capital, and it takes time to accumulate that capital to be able to afford it. And so it is imperative as an advisor to these folks to be able to help them navigate these tax policies. I've been around 35 tax seasons, and I have experienced last-minute tax changes by our government, and it is extremely frustrating, not only on the taxpayers, but frankly and selfishly, the advisors as well. So I can't encourage you enough to do this swiftly and quickly to help our businesses and our farmers make some decisions.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
President Trump recently announced reciprocal tariffs on a sweeping list of U.S. trading partners. Dave Salmonson, Senior Director of Government Affairs for the American Farm Bureau Federation, says there are two sets of tariffs to keep in mind.
One is a 10% tariff on all goods imports. That will be something that affects every country in the world. Secondly, there are some specific tariffs particular to a set of countries, say tariffs with China, will now be 34%. Tariffs in the countries such as Vietnam will be 46%. So that is a different calculation, which takes into account the tariffs that are put on the U.S. from those countries.
Salmonson says tariffs will go into effect quickly, though consumers may not see impacts right away.
The 10% tariffs on the goods goes into effect this Saturday, April 5th, and the reciprocal tariffs on individual countries go into effect on April 9th.
Chad Smith, Washington.
Jamie Dimon is CEO, J.P. Morgan Chase, at a recent annual senior leadership conference.
When I give these examples, don't say that's something else, that's not my unit, that doesn't affect me. It does. I'm going to tell you why. Because all of you, you know, you're responsible for this company that's worth $700 billion, you know, 320,000 people, all the clients we've seen around the world. You individually are responsible, and you know more than you think. When you travel around, and you talk to people, and you have management meetings, you know more than you think. So we're asking people to do a 10% efficiency target. Again, it's a discipline. And what it basically is, think of it as Bank One. I'm here because, you know, Bank One screwed up a bunch of businesses and stuff like that. The S&L business, the whole business got wiped out. The whole thing. Savings and loans do not exist anymore. And you know what it was? Interest rate mismatch. WAMU, interest rate mismatch. Silicon Valley Bank, interest rate mismatch. The whole mortgage business disappeared. 100% of the brokers and stuff like that disappeared. Kidder disappeared. Drexel disappeared. And these were, if you look at these things, it's complacency, it's bureaucracy, it's arrogance, it's slow to adjust. A lot of it's dishonest numbers. I'm going to give you some very specific examples. Failure to set standards, bad people, bad comp schemes, disincentives, bad incentives, politics, you know, and these things are like all the cancer that kills companies. And, you know, we all have to be very cautious about when that takes place. And I'm going to give you examples about why I think it happens and how we have to combat it. Now, and the things, and it's even more important today because things are faster and more complex. I mean, the world is just faster and more complex. That means we got to move quicker, coordinate better, and do those things.
These same principles can be applied to ag.
Don't get me wrong. I'm going to give you, again, specific examples where the accounting will lead you to the wrong answer. Regulatory rules will lead you to the wrong answer. Regulatory capital will lead you to the wrong answer. And yet, we fall into this little echo chamber. So instead of know your numbers, I'm going to change it to get your numbers right. Understand them. Analyze them. Work them. Test them. And don't be rote about them. I mean, you got to have the budget in the thing. You can't always compare yourself to forecast, because then you're always very close. Okay, and it's just you got to show the budget. You got to show the budget. Okay, and then the other one, which I hate, like really hate, is comparing yourself to peer average. I mean, really? Really? Is that what we're going to do? You should always compare yourself to the best. Where are they, and where are we?
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Last month, within USDA's latest forecast for Florida's all orange crop,
forecast for 2024-2025 marketing year is 522,000 tons, down 35% from last season.
Leads to this possibility, according to Catherine Weber of the Economic Research Service.
If realized, this Florida orange crop would be the smallest in 95 years.
What's behind the latest decrease of the Sunshine State's orange crops?
In October 2024, Hurricane Milton caused millions of dollars of damage in Florida's prime citrus producing counties. The storm dealt a further blow to the Florida citrus industry, already beset with challenges from the devastating botanical disease known as citrus greening.
In terms of impacts to Florida's orange juice industry,
with fewer oranges this year, U.S. orange juice production forecast is expected to fall to its lowest since the early 1970s. Beginning orange juice stocks are lower this season. Domestic orange juice prices have continued to climb, and ERS expects orange juice imports to rise higher this year than last year.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.